it's important that we unpack the words that we're using. And I want people to understand what occupy means to you and what it could mean in the future as a way to kind of articulate that.
Right. Well, I think what occupy was and what it could and what the new terminology that comes out of it could be are two very different things. I think occupy was just a burst of energy, of anger, of frustration, people coming together, and just it's like as if imagine like if 3,000 people came in a room and just screamed, you know, just to scream for the sake of it, because there's been no space to do that, and there was a threshold that happened in society, and that threshold broke through the skin. You have this wound. The analogy or the way that Natasha talks about it, you have this like open wound, and that happened. There was a threshold, and it was broken. So that happened, and people tried to scramble to figure out what could they do. They have all this energy. What could you do to make it the thing? And yes, we ended up using the language that was described, that was created by the media to describe ourselves, because that's what allowed the energy to continue and grow. But what I think will be different this time is I think it could be, and I think personally it should be focused. I think we need to recognize that we cannot be focusing on 20 different things separately. There are a few things right now, and the system as is, that ties everything together, and we need to focus on those, and we just need to continue to hammer at them. Whereas Occupy was very amorphous, and it felt good to not be defined. Now it doesn't feel good to not be defined. It feels like we need that in order to rally again. So I think that's the difference. And I don't think right now it's a movement. I think right now it's a bunch of people. It's a network. It's people who have found each other who are now like, yes, I found you. You're angry. You're upset. You're dedicated. Great. Let's do something together about it. And they're committed to each other, and they're committed to like growing these relationships despite having gone through 8 months of very precarious, very up and down situations, very intense, but they're still there and they're still talking to each other. And that's an amazing thing. So what can you do now? Come together, figure out what is it that ties all of these issues together, and start just hammering away at it.
And that concludes part one to this two-part interview that you're listening to. Once again, Occupy Wall Street is heard Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. here in the studios of WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and WBAI.org.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. It's exactly 7 o'clock, and that means, once again, it's time for Off the Hook.
Understood, but nearly no.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Mike.
Greetings from the wind tunnel.
Well, you ruined it. You ruined the surprise. I was going to explain that to everybody. Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Dot Rhett.
Hello.
Jim.
Hello.
Someone's running in, and I guess that's got to be Red Hack. Let's just wait for him. Red Hack, go ahead. Sit down. You know what? No, that's it. That's it. This is your last show. I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. You've been late too many times. Just, you know, you can stay for this hour. You can stay for that, but get out after that, and I don't want to hear your voice again. All right? All right?
Okay.
All right. That's just the way it has. Sometimes, folks, you have to lay down the law. Sometimes you got to be the bad guy. You know? Why don't you move far away, go to the other side of the country or something like that, and just stay there for a while and see how you like that, huh?
That's a pretty good idea.
All right.
Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Starting next week, why don't you do that?
All right.
All right. Come in late on this show.
All right, well, that's settled.
All right.
That went remarkably smoothly.
Well, people do what I say.
I would expect confrontation, really.
No, people do what I say. When you stand up like that and you clench your fists, people...
You're sitting down. I can see you. We're in the same room.
I sat down after standing up. Don't make it difficult, Mike, or you'll be next. How would you like to wind up in the Philippines or something?
I would argue, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. We're not finished with the introductions yet. Our special guest, Steve Rambam, is not in that chair like he's supposed to be. Where is he? He's supposed to be here. Do I have to send him someplace now, too?
You should hire a private investigator.
He is a private investigator, and I don't think I could hire him to investigate himself, although that would be a good trick.
It'd be a very easy job for him.
I like how we have his chair empty like that. Just make sure the microphone... No, you do not sit in Steve Rambam's chair. That's one thing you can never do. But, Dot Red, if you could move the microphone closer to the chair, so that way when he is talking, it'll... No, not away from the chair. Okay, using a different microphone. Fine.
Or you could have that microphone, and we could move the microphones.
Oh, this is just getting off to a great start, isn't it? We're not even finished yet. Down in Philadelphia, we have Bernie... Oh, wait a minute, hold on. And somewhere in Pennsylvania is Bernie S.
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
All right, I got it right this week. And out on the West Coast, where I believe Red Hack will soon be relocating. This person, though, is in Seattle, not where I think you're going to go. Kyle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all the craziness. It's just, and I think it's the heat. There's no air conditioning in here. If you listen, this is what Mike was referring to before. There's a fan going. Yeah, this is just like WUSB, where I always complain about the heat. Except now it's come to WBAI, where for some reason we don't have any air in here, so we have to have are we going to keep the fan going for the whole show?
Yes.
Well, I guess we have to breathe, don't we?
I mean, it feels great. It's right on the back of my head.
You're sitting right in front of it, and you're blocking all the air. That's
another
issue.
It's mostly that monitor, I think, for you. I'm sure our radio audience really wants to know. But.
Well, it's also, do you notice these lights, these bright lights that are shining down right on me like I'm being interrogated, which is what it feels like a lot of times.
Where were you on the night of the 12th?
Uh-huh. All right, well, okay. Speaking of interrogation, we have, hopefully Steve will be here soon, and we have some things to talk about with him. But we also have some announcements to make and some adventures to relate, and that's where Kyle comes in because, he's back in Washington right now for a couple of weeks. But before he left in a hurry, we had a bit of an adventure a couple of states away. In fact, you can get a more detailed version of this on last night's Off the Wall, which you can also find on www.2600.com. But we, in the tradition of visiting Men with Hill last month, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That which is a massive monitoring post in the north of England. We decided, for the sake of the of next year's Hacker Calendar, whose theme is surveillance, to visit the good old folks down in Fort Meade, Maryland, who run the National Security Agency, otherwise known as the NSA. We decided to drive down there and snap some photos and see what we can put in the calendar as far as representing surveillance in this country. And you cannot represent surveillance better than just taking a look at the NSA complex over there. It didn't quite go as planned, though, did it, Kyle?
No, not entirely. We were able to check out the area and the community that sort of supports the main campus, which is really... sprawling, and we looked for signs of surveillance there, and then got closer to the actual facility, and looked for some vantage points and found a little bit, but we were stopped actually towards the latter part of our journey. We were at a museum, like a visitor center, and we had to show ID and explain like why we were there.
Let me just explain before we get into that part of it. Basically, we spent a couple of hours just driving around trying to see if we could get onto the campus at all, because in the past it wasn't a hard thing to do. You could drive right up to the building, you could drive over to the massive radio telescope satellite dish type things that they have over there. Bernie, maybe you have an idea as to what those massive things are. You could fit a house on one of them.
You mean these big, look like gigantic golf balls?
These ones, as I recall, and I can't tell anymore because I can't get near them, they didn't have the golf ball things over them. They do have the golf ball things, but...
They're just massive satellite dishes.
Yeah, massive satellite dishes.
Like a DirecTV dish times 1,000.
Yeah, and I don't think they're just watching movies. I think they must be doing something else,
well,
right?
They could be. I mean, think of the movies they could pull in with that thing, frankly.
Oh, you know, movies from extraterrestrial planets and things, yeah.
They could pull in Al Minar, and I'm sure they do.
Uh-huh.
But in any case, they are monitoring all kinds of what's called SIGINT signals. It's a military abbreviation or acronym for signals intelligence from all the satellites that are up there. A lot of the major countries have surveillance satellites up there, spy satellites that are sending down digital data. It's all encrypted. But as we know, this NSA, their game is encryption and the breaking thereof. So they're sucking down all this stuff and analyzing it, doing traffic analysis when they can't decrypt it. But basically, they're storing it all. They suck all this stuff down and they store it and they work on it at their leisure.
What kind of, if you can just give us an example, what kind of data might they be downloading and analyzing?
It could be imagery, basically image files or live video from spy satellites. It could be signals intelligence satellites. There are satellites up there that do nothing but eavesdropping, and then they beam down their findings to the nation that is has put those satellites up. So we're watching the U.S. government, NSA, is watching them watch us. And
okay.
We try to gain intelligence from that.
And they're also, the NSA is also watching us through our own satellites, correct?
Yeah, how about that? NSA, they're supposed to be doing only surveillance of foreign communications, but as we've learned in recent years, thanks to the Bush administration, NSA is targeting the U.S. population en masse with their surveillance capabilities. To what extent, we're not exactly sure, but I hear that next month we're going to hear firsthand from a former NSA employee.
What is it? Everybody has to ruin surprises today? Yeah, you know, I was getting to that, Bernie. I was getting to that. I was going to explain the fan. I was going to explain the whole thing, but, you know, we're going to get to it. We're first going to tell the story because there is more to just going down there and taking a few nice snapshots. We found out, and we kind of suspected this, that people who work for surveillance agencies don't like it when you surveil them, or even act a little bit curious. The fences, the barricades, that sort of got the message across. But there was also, and Kyle, I asked you to do this last night on the other radio show, but you took a picture of a sign that was on the outside of the perimeter. And it was a warning sign of all the things that you're not supposed to do. I think you did the right thing by taking a picture of it, because there's no way we could read that quickly, certainly not in a car, and even standing there for a good few minutes takes time to read it. So taking a picture is the best way to convey this, not only to ourselves, but to all the listeners out there who might be thinking of going down to Fort Meade, Maryland, which, by the way, is off State Route 295. And it's confusing because that's near the Interstate 95, but 295 is actually Maryland Route 295. It's called the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, and it's midway down between Baltimore and Washington. You'll see an exit for NSA employees only, but then you'll see another exit for NSA, and that's where you can get off at Fort Meade and make sure that you don't do anything that this sign tells you not to do. Do you have that sign handy?
Yes.
Okay, why don't you read what's on it?
Yeah, I'll start. It says, warning, restricted area. This area has been declared a restricted area by authority of the Director of National Security Agency/Chief Central Security Service. pursuant to the provisions of the Internal Security Act of 1950 and implementing executive orders and directives, unauthorized entry is prohibited. All persons, property, and vehicles entering or exiting this area are liable to search. By entering this area, you consent to search. Unauthorized removal of classified defense material or U.S. government property, governmental property is prohibited. Unauthorized photography, note-taking, making of drawings, maps, or other graphic representations are prohibited unless specifically authorized by the Chief Office of Security. Items in the categories listed below are prohibited within the restricted area and are subject to confiscation, and violators may be prosecuted. Firearms and ammunition, explosives and incendiaries, volatile or hazardous substances, photographic and imagery equipment and media recording and sound equipment and media electronic and computer equipment and media transmitting and receiving equipment and attachments, contraband, or illegal substances.
All of this was on one sign. It wasn't even that big a sign, but that was what was surrounding the perimeter. And so you grabbed a picture of that. Bernie, did anything on that surprise you?
No, I think it's very comprehensive, and I like how they, at the end, they say, and illegal substances.
Yeah, I like that, too. They just sort of threw that in. By the way, don't do anything else illegal, but don't make any drawings or maps or anything like that. I imagine describing it is probably something they don't want you to do either, but yeah, we did it anyway. Shortly after, that the picture that Kyle took was actually at the museum site, which is not technically on their campus. You don't have to go through any kind of a gate for that, and there was nobody there. Just prior to that, we had been in a parking lot, which again was not on their campus, and I was trying to throw out a couple of coffee cups. So I basically walked the entire perimeter of the parking lot looking for a garbage can, which I did not find. And apparently that set off some kind of security alert, because right after Kyle took the picture of the sign by the museum, we were driving away, and as we were driving away, we came across an SUV, an NSA SUV. That waved for us to stop, and before we knew it, there were four NSA police cars around us asking us all kinds of questions, such as, well, what, did you come all the way here just to just to come to this place, and where are you from, and how did you meet, and you know, all kinds of other things. They kept us there for a good 25 minutes, but it was, am I describing it properly, Kyle?
Yeah, that was basically the gist of it. They wanted to talk to us. And just sort of checking out the area and traveling around in the state in general, looking for iconic symbols of like surveillance and that whole culture. And I'm pretty passionate about photography and you know, what you're allowed to do and that kind of thing. And I think photographers should be able to photograph important institutions or you know, government institutions that are you know, even like this, very controversial or whatever. It's all right, you know, especially, you know, from public roads and all that. And I don't want to get into that too much, but it's really interesting to visit the facility and see it. It was very tough to get a good vantage point, but it was beautiful weather, and I don't know. They wanted to make a report because I guess we had walked around the parking lot, and I guess, I don't know, I was looking at, they have apparently like a little walking trail, and yeah, you were looking for a garbage can.
Yeah, and everything we did was off of their property, or off of the main campus property. It's still, I guess, the NSA Museum is part of NSA. But the funny thing is, yes, you were taking pictures. We even stopped on the parkway at one point and made like we had a flat or something so that you could get a good, nice, steady shot of the place. But we didn't trespass. We didn't go onto their property at all. And the funny thing is that when they did stop us, it wasn't for photography. I don't think they even were aware that we were doing that. They just saw us walking in the parking lot and thought we were suspicious. And, you know, I have to wonder, four NSA police cars, how many NSA police cars do you think there are in the first place? We had the attention, a good amount of the attention of the NSA focused on us at that moment. And I thought that was just, you know, pretty cool.
I don't understand. There's a museum. It was just closed at the time. Is that?
Yeah, we went on a Saturday, and apparently the museum, well, actually, we were there towards sunset as well. So I'm not sure when the museum is open. And you know, they don't know either, because we asked the cops. We asked them two questions. Where can we get good crabs in Baltimore? And when is the museum open? And they didn't really know the answer to either one of those
Emmanuel.
Things. Yes.
The museum actually has an interesting history. I'll make it brief. About, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, there was a hotel. It was a hotel, that museum. And NSA, the hotel was going out of business, and the NSA bought it. People used to stay at the hotel when they were visiting the NSA on official business. But then the place was going out of business. The NSA bought it, and they converted it to like a members-only museum. So only employees of the NSA could view like their history and stuff like that. And then I think it was the Washington Post broke a story 15, 20 years ago about this secret museum that nobody's supposed to know about. And then after that, there were so many people coming to see it that the NSA finally had to take out the classified stuff and say, okay, it's open to the public. And now it's open. I think it's only open during business hours. But I was there a couple of times, and it's very impressive. It's worth going to. You can actually sit on a Cray supercomputer, and there's all this. There's Enigma machines. There's really historical stuff going back to the encryption is a really important code breaking and making and breaking is a really important part of our nation's history and world history, frankly. And a lot of that is documented there, and it's worth checking out.
You know, I agree, and it's an interesting place to go. I've been there myself many years ago, but I want more than that. I don't want just that little crumb off the table. I want to see what's going on in the complex. What are these people up to? What are they doing with my tax dollars? What's the idea here? What are they after? And I think people should be allowed to get tours of the place and to have it explained to them, because we're funding it after all, and it's huge. It's scary, and they really pay attention to what you're doing, so I think we should pay attention to what they're doing as well.
Just so you know, Emmanuel,
yes.
there are literally, this has been documented by authors such as James Banford, who's written several books about the National Security Agency, quite an expert. There are dozens of acres of computers underground there at Fort Meade. So what you see on top is literally the tip of the iceberg, that, you know, that great big black cube of a building that you saw, that's the tip of the iceberg. Underneath there are dozens of acres of computers, and they're not just like PCs. These are the most advanced supercomputers on the planet, with optical processing and quantum process. I mean, stuff that is science fiction to us is going on there.
So all I'm saying is, once a year you have an open house of some sort, people wander around and see what's underneath and just sort of you know, be impressed by it all and go away thinking, wow, it's cool to be an American, you know, that kind of thing.
I mean, I can understand also the secrecy in that, well, if people think that certain encryption standards or whatnot are secure when in fact they've been broken by the agency, they don't want people to know that, because that way they can keep eavesdropping on it. I'm not saying that they have or they haven't, but, you know, I think oftentimes these research agencies are decades ahead of the research community.
Well, there's just too many secrets in that place, and especially when all you're doing is walking around and looking at the buildings, it raises such alarm. That makes me very suspicious of them. You know, it's... yeah, yes, go ahead, Mike.
I think you're right to be suspicious of them. Like, all the evidence we have is that they're up to no good.
Yeah, it seems that way. It seems that way, but we can't prove it. We need to be able to do that.
They do some good.
Well, tell us some of the good they do, besides the museum.
I mean, the United States has missions that it needs to keep secret. Not, all nations do have some legitimate secrets to protect themselves. And the NSA doesn't just break other countries' codes. They also are the code-making organization. And, you know, they are in charge of basically information security for the United States. Like all military government agencies that have secure information, NSA is really involved with ensuring the security of that information. And they also do cold code breaking. You know, frankly, I would rather a government agency, I'd rather our military, which is NSA is part of, focus on breaking other people's codes and monitoring stuff than like dropping bombs on them from unmanned drones and things like that. You can gain a lot, and you can prevent some violence and stuff by just eavesdropping and finding out what's going on. But of course, it can be also used for other purposes. I'm saying that
they're
not all up to no good.
Hey Bernie, how do you think they decide where to drop the unmanned drone bombs?
There's good they do and there's bad they do. I'm just saying it's not all. You can't paint it with a broad brush.
Is Stuxnet one of the things that NSA was involved with?
Reportedly.
Uh-huh.
Reportedly, they actually wrote this Stuxnet virus program, not a virus. Yeah, it's a virus.
Well, it's a computer worm, but...
it's a worm, but it was a worm, yes, it was a worm that wasn't supposed to worm its way out of the Iranian nuclear centrifuge facilities, but it did worm its way out through an employee's laptop, an Iranian employee's laptop, apparently, or at least reportedly, and that's kind of interesting. I'm kind of amused that it's become this big scandal now that who the administration leaked this information. But it's a really interesting story about what NSA is doing to try to get information about what's going on in other places, and even using a computer worm to destroy nuclear centrifuges in Iran. It's fascinating.
And there's also a word out that NSA is looking for cybersecurity experts to help with that kind of thing over the next few years. And it's not as easy as they might have thought. There aren't enough cybersecurity experts steeped in the skills needed to wage cyber warfare. That's a big problem in the NSA. They need more of us to become warriors and fight these battles. They say they're getting little help from universities, which are either unable or unwilling to teach students how to exploit network security vulnerabilities. So interesting things ahead. Of course, this will be discussed in great detail at the HOPE conference coming up. And we have some more information on that in just a moment. But I just want to finish up with Kyle. Any concluding thoughts or remarks on what happened to us while we were down there?
It basically opened my eyes a little bit. I got a chance to see it, but I'm glad that, you know, we were able to tell the story a little bit, and I don't know, I guess it's a routine. It was kind of quiet there and spooky.
It was quiet. It was a little too quiet for my taste. I believe in about a month, when the HOPE conference is taking place, do you think we can say that there might be a photograph from the NSA appearing in the 2013 hacker calendar?
I don't know. I can't say. I can't say. We got some interesting perspectives when we were out there.
It's still being analyzed by our experts. All right, well, Kyle, I want to thank you for your courage in going out, taking a picture of that sign, reading the sign on the air, and just basically telling everybody what you saw, which I think is very important. So we'll talk to you again next time.
Good night.
All right. Now for our announcement of something related to the NSA. This was just announced today. Our second keynote address at this year's HOPE No. 9 conference is going to be delivered by former National Security Agency analyst turned whistleblower William Binney. Mike, you and I saw William Binney at the Whitney Museum about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. This guy is the real thing. He was inside that complex for 30 years, learned an awful lot about how it all worked and just what it was that they did in there was part of the whole thing. And after discovering post 9/11 that the attention of the NSA was being turned increasingly towards the American public, he decided to become a whistleblower instead and stop working for them. He estimates that the NSA has put together over 20 trillion transactions, those are phone calls, emails, and all kinds of other forms of data, just from Americans. And some experts say it's possible that could include copies of almost all of emails sent and received from people who live in the United States, encrypted or not. Copies could easily exist over there. So, William Binney will be giving the keynote address, one of the keynote addresses at the HOPE conference this July, July 13, 14, and 15 at the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York. Other keynote address will be given by the Yes Men, and they're a whole lot of fun as well. In fact, they were in the news last week, too. Hopefully, we'll get to that a little later. More information on the entire thing, go to www.hope.net, and we hope to see you there next month at the conference. Steve Rambam, you're here. You made it. Any problem? Any problem getting to the station? Were they blocking?
No problem getting here. Okay. You had my name misspelled downstairs.
I did not spell your name. Someone else did that. All right.
Passing the buck.
I apologize for the heat. I apologize for the loud fan in the background. But unfortunately, I don't know. We didn't pay the air conditioning bill or something. Not sure what's going on. Now
sucks that has hit the AC system.
Yeah. Stuxnet.
I don't believe our air conditioning system is sufficiently sophisticated to be affected by Stuxnet.
It could be part of the Iranian infrastructure, though, and it might be affected in that way. That's entirely possible.
Well, although we do have all this nuclear fuel here at WBAI, we need to keep an eye on.
Don't
so.
Talk about oh,
we're
that.
We're not supposed
yeah,
to
we're not
that.
Supposed
yeah.
to talk about the nuclear. So anyway, Steve, now that you're here, you're going to be at the conference, obviously. You're at every conference that
I
we
am.
Give. And you always...
I am, and I'm bringing a rather impressive lineup of colleagues with me.
Uh-huh. You always do? You pack the
room?
Some
knowingly, some unknowingly.
Okay. Well, that's what we're here to discuss. You want a victim. Is that right?
I do want a victim.
Doesn't sound as bad as it... I mean, no, it sounds worse than it is, what I'm trying to say.
No, I think it sounds exactly the way it is.
It's pretty bad.
I want someone who will allow me to both conduct an extremely in-depth investigation of them, a cyber investigation, no following of them physically, although they will certainly be followed digitally. Every place their phone shows up, every call they make, every posting they make,
I think
every
tweet, followed,
every photo.
Being followed physically, I think, is better because you can turn around and see, you can catch the person, you can jump on them and you know,
yeah, you can
hit them with
a stick.
Put
on a baseball cap and change your jacket and slip into the subway.
Yeah, but digitally, there's no escape.
There is no escape, and that's the point. Actually, I just came from purchasing a drone, which will be at the conference.
I knew this day would come.
There will be multiple drones at my event. Some surveillance drones, some attack drones, which will shoot Nerf missiles at anyone who annoys me.
You're not talking about humans. You're talking about actual machines.
I'm talking about actual flying drones.
Okay. All right.
That will be hovering throughout the very large room that I speak in during the Q&A session. One drone will zip over to the people asking questions, and the other one will be available if there's an annoying person.
This I have to see.
You will.
Okay, I hope so.
You can be our test dummy if you like.
You're not kidding us.
No, I'm not kidding.
Actual drones.
I'm not kidding. My friend Yuri, who is chief of cybersecurity chief of IT security for a very large New York hospital, is going to be flying one drone, and I've got my buddy Bob, who's coming in from Michigan, who flies drones for real, is going to be flying the attack drone. Because the attack drone...
Wait, how's it going to get inside the hotel room?
Well, the surveillance drone is only 40 inches by 40
okay,
inches.
Okay, so he's not actually going to be flying it. He'll be
controlling. No, it'll be absolutely
but
flying.
But he won't be inside it, is what I'm saying. When
no,
you said
no,
he was
no.
flying it, I figured he was going to be up there.
A drone is, these drones are unmanned drones.
Okay, unmanned
they
drones.
They are UAVs.
Uh-huh. All right.
The attack drone is, we may have two. We're trying to see how good they are in swarms. We want to see if we can replicate real-world swarms inside an enclosed area. And if we can, I will have two drones hovering over me ready to pounce on anyone who asks a question I really don't want to answer.
I think it's great that we're using the same technology that we're trying to find out all this secret information about, and we're just over ourselves.
We're not going to have a couple of Air Force guys in Fort Oaxaca flying it from 3,000 miles away.
Let's hope
this
not.
This will be on site.
So you're thinking about having swarms of attack drones inside enclosed spaces.
Well,
and I can't help but think.
I don't
this
know if is two a swarm.
No, two's not a swarm.
You
okay,
need
so
more.
There's going to be two drones: one attack drone, one surveillance drone. There may be a second attack drone. I think at that point, three is a mini swarm.
There may be a swarm because I think a lot of people are going to bring drones to this conference. I don't know how that's got started.
Well, maybe we can shoot them down.
That might happen too.
We've already had some drones of various sorts at the conference before, but
you're
talking
about
this.
Humans now, aren't you? I can tell.
Oh well, we want to go to that.
We have a talk on drones, I think.
A talk on drones, yes.
Maybe we should have these drones come in and attend the talk on drones.
Maybe the drones just run the conference, you know, because I could sure use a break.
It'd save us a lot of work.
Do you remember that movie, I forget what it was, where at the beginning of the movie it starts out, there's a teacher, and then the students start putting down digital tape recorders, and at the end of the movie, there's a room full of digital tape recorders, and the camera pans up to the front, and there's a big reel-to-reel giving the lecture.
Rob T. Firefly, 40 points.
That was a movie called Real Genius, which is a great hacker film for many reasons.
That is correct.
It's a great movie.
Yes.
That's what I think is eventually going to happen. I think Hope, like 5.2K or whatever it is at some point, will be just cyborgs giving the talks and attending. I intend to, when I die, actually find some bender-like creature and put my brain in the robot.
That's
a concept. I want to keep attending, Hopes through the 23rd century.
And they're going to continue at the Hotel Pennsylvania because that building will never be torn down. And even with cyborgs and drones,
it'll probably be covered by rubble during the
first robot
second,
wars.
Second thermonuclear war, sure.
Okay.
Hey, Steve.
Go ahead, Bernie.
Steve, getting back to your request for a victim, you're going to track this victim using all open source methods. Is that right?
Well, we're going to do exactly what we did to Rick Dakin, but we are also going to expand to use the new technologies, tracking and amalgamating posts and determining where the person was at the time of the post and using that post to further de-anonymize the person's other posts. One of the things we're going to be covering quite a bit in my seminar this year is third-party de-anonymization of your activity on the net. It is absolutely impossible, or functionally impossible, for you to be anonymous anymore on the net. And how the various online services, because they want to know where you are and what you're doing and what you like and who your friends are colonizing the web, where even if you don't check into their particular infrastructure, and by that I mean Google or Facebook or what have you, their various like buttons and monitoring of cookies and things like that know where you are and what you're doing anyway, even if you're not logged into their system. Now, we have a backdoor way to utilize that tracking, as I might add, so does the U.S. government. By the way, when you said it's 20 trillion transactions, let me tell you, you didn't read that carefully. It's 20 trillion trillion transactions. It is 20 septillion transactions to date.
I was just quoting what he said. So,
well, it's written down wrong. Every phone call, every email, every cyber connect to a certain type of system. I mean, right now, the U.S. government is getting into, and this is going to be another part of my talk, something called the Internet of Things, which is your refrigerator has an Ethernet port. You can text your stove to have it start cooking a casserole before you come home. Even Apple is starting to incorporate with iOS 6 location alerts, where if you have purchased a 30-day prescription for, I don't know, I'll say Xanax.
Okay.
And it's the 29th day and you are passing your drugstore, it will send you a text saying your prescription is expiring, you better go in and renew it.
You're not supposed to read text while you're driving.
Well, wow. What can I tell you?
Especially on Xanax.
Yes.
Well, but, right, especially on Xanax.
Well, right now I've got the drugstore calling me, reminding me constantly.
At any rate, what I need is a privacy victim. Ideally, I want someone who actually has a life.
What do you mean by that, someone who has a life?
Well, I'd like them to actually be someone who doesn't sit in their basement 6 days a week. I'd like to be able to actually track their activities. I'd like to be able to track their purchases, when they go out with their friends, what they do, where they go. I would like to be able to show that it is possible today for an investigator, especially a governmental investigator that has a backdoor to Google. And we're going to be talking about Google backdoors, by the way, and Facebook backdoors. Google and Facebook are so deeply in bed with I had a member of the U.S. intelligence community tell me, and I thought this was the most fantastic quote ever, that Google is this administration's Halliburton. Halliburton was for Bush 41 and 43, Google is to our Vulcan President Obama.
We just lost our net access, and I don't think it's
probably
coming
not
back.
An accident. Probably not an accident.
Wow!
Suddenly, we are no longer live streaming.
Let me just ask one quick thing. You don't want someone obviously with outstanding warrants or anything like that, because you're going to find out about it.
I am an investigator. I am very much ideologically different from the people in this room, and although I've certainly covered for a few people in this organization, but if I find out you have a warrant, you will go to jail. Yes, please don't call me if you have an outstanding warrant or
that's common sense.
Or I'm going to find child porn on your computer. Or anything like that. I mean, don't be a knucklehead about this. Be a real person who stupidly believes you have nothing to hide.
Yeah, there's plenty of people like that out there.
So you're basically looking for a volunteer to just live their life as they were before and then be surprised at what you can find out about them.
Well, you know, I don't know how surprised they're going to be. The people that come to the Hope Conference are pretty hip. I have to tell you, one reason why I love doing the Hope Conference is because I can talk in shorthand. I don't have to explain every single little thing. When I talk about IPv6, nobody goes, huh, what's that?
But even with that, your talks still go 3 hours. So imagine how long they would go if you had to explain everything.
Well, you don't have to imagine. It's a two-day seminar. I just gave a full-day seminar to the investigative reporter team at the Miami Herald. I'm giving a two-day course through the Society of Professional Investigators. Which, by the way, if you are an investigator, I got to do one semi-promo shout-out here for probably the best investigative and security fraternal group in this area. There's a group called SPI, Society of Professional Investigators. Their website is SPI, SPIonline.info. If you are an investigator, a computer security tech, a security person, a law enforcement officer, a forensic specialist, any of the fields allied to law enforcement and investigations, this is probably the most remarkable group of people you've ever seen. And I urge you to join. I have just become the education chairman of that group, so I'm going to be setting up a 50-hour course, not a straight 50 hours, but 50 hours over...
You could do 50
yeah,
hours
Yeah, I probably
straight.
Could. At the Next Hope. And in fact, let me tell you, SPI is going to authorize, I have found 6 talks, including 2 of the talks given by the EFF attorney, 6 talks at Hope that we are authorizing for our BCIP, Board Certified Investigative Professional Program, that if you attend these talks, we will issue you CEs and we will give you credits towards the credentials. So if you're an investigator, who either needs CEs or you want to participate in the BCIP program, contact me or contact one of the other members of the SPI board, and we'll tell you what we are authorizing as far as Hope. We're not authorizing all the talks. We really don't want to give continuing education for some, you know, knucklehead teaching you how to do silly things, but Hope has a lot of seminars that are very much not knuckleheaded, and we're impressed by them, and we're gonna issue CEs if you attend them.
Now that's an endorsement.
How do people get a hold of you to do this?
Me, I probably shouldn't do this, but our public contact point for my investigative agency is pallorium@pallorium.com. That's PALLORIUM at pallorium, same spelling, .com. My phone number is 212-969-0286, 212-969-0286. If you want to volunteer, contact me or contact, what's the off-the-hook address?
OTH@2600.com.
OTH@2600.com, or call me, or call Emmanuel. I'll give you his home phone number.
Yeah, let's move on.
No, I'm kidding.
But
we really do want to volunteer, and trust me, you will help make our seminar exponentially better. There's nothing like real-world examples of how these things work.
And if you want more information on the Hope Conference, of course, go to the website www.hope.net. That's H-O-P-E, Hackers on Planet Earth. Rob?
Now, to take it back for a moment, you very briefly mentioned Rick Dakin, but for somebody who may not know that whole story, can you give us the really short version of what that was all about?
Short version, no. I can give you a brief version. Rick Dakin is a very impressive guy who probably would kill me if he bumped into me, because we are actually still doing a book together, and it's about 90% done, and the remaining 10% has been sitting there for 2 years, and I haven't finished it, so entirely my fault. Rick Dakin is a very well-known writer. He wrote Geek Mafia and a number of other books. He's a pretty remarkable guy. And on this program, on Off the Hook one night, I put out a call for a victim, and he volunteered. And we did a remarkable in-depth analysis of him, and actually used it for a talk. Now, the talk was ever so slightly delayed, because in 2006, the FBI, despite the fact that I'm an investigator and I routinely work with the federal government and with federal agencies, the FBI was rather annoyed that I found out that one of their chief informants, one of their high echelon informants, was essentially an escaped mental patient. And that's not an exaggeration. The story is even wilder than that. So six agents in raid jackets and weapons and whatever stormed into the Hope Conference and took me out of there in handcuffs as I was on my way into the room to give my talk.
And we all thought we were the ones in danger, and instead they haul you off. That's the amazing thing.
Yeah, I mean, mind you, the charges were dropped fairly instantly, and the two federal prosecutors that authorized it were, as the saying goes, returned to the private sector. And I amazingly still to this day have no criminal record. I had to wait until we reconvened a few months later at the Stevens Institute of Technology for Hope 2600.1, I think it was called, or the last Hope version.
Hope number six. Yeah, that last talk of Hope number six.
6.1 or whatever the heck it was. Uh-huh. Tell you what, it was a packed room. It was a major event. And which by the way, the FBI was considerate enough to attend and sit quietly.
Well, they always attend. They're always in there somewhere. Sometimes they're quiet.
Well, they are.
Sometimes
my talks.
So the victim, it can be anywhere in the world, anywhere in the country.
No. Look. Ideally, the following criteria should be met. Number one, it should be someone who actually has a life, goes out, does things. Second of all, it should be somebody who's going to, in advance, sign a ferocious, frightening release that we're going to send them. You're going to have to sign a release. Number three, what would be best would be if this is somebody who's actually going to attend Hope, so they can be right there as I reveal our digital proctology
and
exam.
Please don't chicken out at the last minute, because that...
That happened in 2004. That's
ruins
correct.
Everything. Ruins the whole thing.
Yeah, we did an unbelievable review on a guy who's a journalist, who's a well-known journalist. I won't say his name. But the day before my talk, his attorney called me. I said, I have a release. He said, okay, we'll sue you anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, what do you expect? If you're going to have Steve look into you, he's going to find out things. So don't be surprised by that. I guess also we should point out, if you're a kid, probably there's not enough on you yet. You might be an interesting person, but nobody knows yet, right?
Yeah. And by the way, if you're a kid, you may not have the legal ability to sign a release.
True.
You know, I don't want to put up a little walking digital icon that shows school Pizza Paula home, school Pizza Paula home. I want to have somebody who goes out, who works, who goes to clubs, who does strange things, who, you know, we have a chance of actually embarrassing at some point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, as far as actual private information, such as home phone numbers, social security numbers, is that something that this person can expect to get out to everybody?
No, but I will at some point hand him a piece of paper and say, is this in fact your social security number? And he'll go, oh, crap, yes. Is this your home phone number? Yes, it is. Does your social security number trace to all of these things? Mm-hmm. Was your cell phone in the following 840 locations during the past 3 weeks? And that sort of thing. Yes, all right. A lot of it is going to be revealed. I mean, there are some things that will allow other people to do you harm or annoy you, we won't put out there, like a social security number. We won't put out your full date of birth. We won't put your home phone number.
Well, that's more than corporations will do, because they'll give all that information away.
You know, that's an interesting thing. I came in late, so I don't know if you actually talked about the Spokio case.
No, we haven't talked about that. We don't tell us what's going on.
Well, for those of you who don't know what Spokio is, you know, they could have been so much more than they are, because they have the right idea. They go out and they suck down all of the various social media sites, Facebook and MySpace and Google Plus and Flickr and so on and so on and so on and so on, and Foursquare and Instagram and everything out there. And they build a profile of everyone based on their social media activity and what's on their social media sites. Now, they needed to monetize that. And what they did was they started selling it to human resource companies and credit bureaus and background check people for pre-employment screening and credit checks and things like that. And they got spanked. The FTC, which is easily the most useless, worthless federal agency on the planet, no teeth whatsoever, no genuine understanding of most of the things that they police and regulate, for once did the right thing. They jumped on Spokio, and Spokio signed a consent decree that said, we don't admit we did anything wrong, but in the future, these particular things we won't do, and they paid an $800,000 fine. Now, a couple of things you need to know. First of all, $800,000 was basically cost of doing business for them. Meaningless. Second of all, the FTC consent decree was meaningless. Third of all, nothing that Spokio did initially was illegal. The fact of the matter is, and the most important thing, frankly, for anybody to know about the current state of affairs on the net is that Google and Facebook and MySpace and Flickr and Instagram and Foursquare and all of these various other companies are private companies. You do not have any right or any control over the information that they gather. If you are a moron enough to submit it, or your friends submit it on your behalf, or they go out and get it because essentially it's in the public domain, tough. Everything that Spokio did until the point where they sold that data for pre-employment screening purposes was totally kosher. Unfortunately for Spokio, there's something called the Federal Fair Credit Employment Act and the Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act, which says if you issue what's called an investigative consumer report that reports on somebody's credit worthiness or worthiness to be hired or something like that, that is federally regulated. So gathering the information was kosher, compiling it was kosher, selling it was kosher, but selling it for pre-employment and selling it for credit screening was not kosher. You have a duty, first of all, to let the consumer, meaning the person you're gathering the information on, know about it. You have a duty to, at least in theory, I mean, the credit bureaus damn sure do it, but in theory, you are supposed to make your best efforts to make sure it's accurate. Spokio's information sucks beyond belief. If you go to Spokio and you check on somebody's date of birth or activities or people in the household or whatever, 50 to 75% of it will be wrong. Now, I'm saying all of this as somebody who owns PeopleFinder.net. One of my agency's subsidiaries is the largest privately held online investigative support service in the country. I own PeopleFinder.net. And I can tell you, I don't care who you are, whoever is listening to this broadcast, I have your home address, I have where you work, I have your social security number, I have your date of birth, I have all your phone numbers, I have your criminal record, I have every time you appeared in court, I have your real property, your voter registration, your UCCs. For me to continue, I would need a second appearance on this show. All legal for two reasons. Number one, I gathered it and compiled it legally. Second of all, I don't sell it for pre-employment screening or for credit granting. In fact, every report that we issue says this report is not suitable and cannot have been requested for pre-employment purposes or for any FCRA regulated purpose. So I'm okay. Spokio wasn't. The important thing to take away from the Spokio incident is A, you, me, and everybody are screwed because there is no regulation on any of this data. And B, you have no control whatsoever on how this data is used.
Well, you know, when you say things like that, it makes me feel kind of helpless, like there's nothing you that are. Can be done. Well, should we just live our lives thinking that there's nothing we can do?
No, and on the contrary, there needs to be at least among the people who think, which is why I love giving these seminars at any 2600 event, because people come who are actually, I mean, my definition of a hacker and the real definition of a hacker is not what a lot of knuckleheads think, but it's people who are inquisitive, who want to take things apart. They want to take their life apart. They want to understand everything down to the root level, including life. And when I talk about these things at Hope, I suspect that the vast majority of the people who leave the Privacy is Dead seminars, or Privacy is Decomposing at this point seminar. What are we calling it?
You know,
Privacy a Postmortem, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Whatever the seminar.
A resurrection maybe in the
future.
Yeah,
whatever, right. 3 days later, Steve Jobs rose.
Okay.
People who attend these seminars and learn what's being done to them take proactive steps. But the vast majority out there have never read a terms of service. They have never looked at the Facebook privacy policy, for example. And the average person is being manipulated. You know, you post on Facebook, I just got my college diploma. I have a new girlfriend. I have a new pet. You know, I'm in drug rehab, things like that. And all of your friends, because Zuckerberg is a brilliant little troll, all of your, and he set it up to work this way, all of your friends go, oh, that's great, that's wonderful. And basically you get encouragement for having posted that, positive reinforcement, mm-hmm. and you keep posting more and more and more and more. But that information is not just for the friends who are going, attaboy, Emmanuel, it's for Zuckerberg and his ad sellers.
Absolutely. Steve Rambam, always a pleasure having you on the show, and we are looking forward so much to having you give your seminar at the Hope Conference coming up next month, www.hope.net.
I'm looking forward to it.
All the information on that at hope.net. And again, if you want to be Steve's victim, you can write to him. The address again, the Pelorium address is what?
Pelorium@pelorium.com or what is it? Off the Hook?
OTH@2600.com right. If you want to write to the radio show. And, just thanks for keeping us on our toes and telling us what's going on out there. And
absolutely.
We look forward to seeing you next month in person at the conference. And, of course, also the NSA whistleblower, William Binney, will be giving one of the keynote addresses. A lot of people from different walks of life and different backgrounds coming together for a meeting of the minds. It's going to be really amazing. Again, more information at www.hope.net. And the Yes Man giving the other keynote address, and about 100 other talks and projects and fun activities and things like that. One final thing that we have to do tonight is say goodbye to Red Hacked, who I kicked off the show earlier today. But actually, in seriousness, you were going to go anyway. Is that right?
I was planning on going anyway.
Do you remember your first show?
No, I remember it was a long time ago. It must be, 7 years?
You were, 6 years old, I think, when you came in. Your voice was really high.
Oh, then back in 2003, maybe.
Yeah, it was something. It's
more
been,
than seven. It's been nine years.
It's been quite a ride.
I'm moving across the country.
Yeah.
Security clearance.
Yeah, you can't hang out with people like us anymore. Yeah. Well, of course, we'll have you back on during Hope. I'll be here.
Back for Hope, yep.
And other times and on the phone as occasion warrants. But anything that you'd like to say, to sum it all up from your perspective, things to say to the audience or advice perhaps? Or
it's been a great time, and I hope you guys keep it up and keep doing what you're doing. And let me come by the studio when I'm in New York.
Well, you're welcome anytime, as long as you can get past the barrier downstairs.
Yeah, I'll make sure to let you know in advance.
All right, folks. Best of luck to Red Hacked as he ventures out west in the wagon train to find out what kind of fortune awaits out there.
I do hope he doesn't get cholera on the way.
Yeah. Well, you know, whatever is fashionable.
Or lose any oxen.
All right. Well, we'll certainly see you again in the future, as well as all the other amazing people that build the various things that we do, Off the Hook, 2600, Hackers on Planet Earth, things like that. Hopefully next week we'll have heat in this place. Not heat. No, we have heat now. Hopefully we'll have air conditioning in this place, and that fan won't be on for the entire show. But we'll see. You know, it'll be interesting. Part of the whole WBAI experience. So write to us again, OTH@2600.com. Until next time, Emmanuel for Off the Hook. Have a good night.
Have great music here at the Off the Hook show. I love Wednesdays. Wednesdays has great radio at WBAI. Hey, ooh, it's a nice day today. Now that it stopped raining, oh man, you know what? These people that water the flowers, they came by and watered the inside of my car. The sunroof is open. The windows were open. They just sprayed the water right on the inside of my car.
Let's
but
hope it's just water.
Yeah, well, it was water. I watched them do it. But you know what, David? It's 8 o'clock here. I said it was 8 o'clock here at WBAI New York. And look at Hank. And it's also the 13th of June. And you know what that means on Wednesdays? You have any idea? Dave's quiet. That means it's time for the Personal Computer Shoe. Here at WBAI, also streaming on the web at WBAI.org. And you can tune in to PCRadioshow.org and get the real scoop and streaming audio. Right, Hank?
Thank you, Stevie. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is Hank Key. I'm in the studio. And in the studio, not only do I have Stevie DB, He came back. Last week we missed him.
Oh, I was at the Larry Graham concert at the Seaport.
Yeah, you went to the Seaport. Right. And what's more important, the Seaport or the WBAI? You don't want to comment on
that.
Well,
look.
And normally we have someone from the left coast, but he's now on the right coast for today.
I know.
And we have David Perry. David, your reason why you're here is because you're here for a new job?
I have a new job. In Jersey City, New Jersey. And you know what I'm going to tell you the nicest thing about Jersey City, New Jersey is? When you look out the window, you see Manhattan.
Oh, in other words.
So you live in Manhattan, you look out the window, what do you see?
Queens.
New Jersey.
No,
yeah.
No, you see Queens.
Depends
you see
on
Brooklyn,
what part of Manhattan you're in.
You see Staten Island.
Yeah,
it's true. And if you have good eyesight, you see Huntington Beach.
Right. Well, that's on the other side of the map, on that New Yorker cover
it's
map.
It's all the same.
But I'm still from the left coast. I'm just here. In person.
Visiting
okay.
in person.
Hey, you know, I want to wrap up something that has been going on for a couple of weeks, and I do have some couple burning questions, and that has to do with the flame virus.
Uh-huh.
You remember? Okay. But I'm going to go back in time. You remember, I think it predated World War II, the Enigma machine?
Sure.
You ever heard of that?
It predated World War I.
The Enigma machine?
No, it was invented in Amsterdam for people who needed to code things over Morse code, over the original, the Morse code wires. Because in those days, there's a great book called The Victorian Internet. They had exactly the same kind of fraud problems that we have on the Internet. They had them over the wires, over the Morse code wires.
Well, what happened was that the British got a hold of the code that the Germans were using.
Yeah.
And they did not brag about it. They did not tell anyone about it. And although there were certain times that
There's something a little deeper than that. They brought in Alan Turing, who was a great, great mathematician. And in order to break the Enigma code, Alan Turing, just as a side effect, invented the electronic programmable computer.
Well,
he built a machine called Colossus. It has 55,000 compactron tubes in it. This is before ENIAC.
Yes. Well, the thing that bothers me is that in those days, if you happen to be able to break a secret, you don't brag about it because you want to be able to continue to benefit from learning what the other side is doing.
Well, Hank, there are wheels within wheels, and
wait.
No wheel.
Here's my question. Why are we bragging about Stuxnet and Flame?
They haven't bragged about Flame yet. They bragged about Stuxnet and Dooku.
No. They've been bragging about it because they're saying it's the same set of codes that were, modules of code that in Stuxnet as it is in...
vulnerabilities.
No, same set of code.
No.
Well, that's...
No.
That's,
no shared code. None.
Well, that is what is claimed in the New York Times.
Right. Now, no shared code.
Now, the question I have is, where is the patriotism? Who the heck is leaking all this information?
Not a clue.
Oh, you really don't want to answer.
I really don't want to answer that, and I don't know.
Okay. Now, the other question I have, is now that we've lost the advantage of having this capability of finding out what the other side is doing, I just hope that there's something in the works to succeed this.
Well, anytime you can see something, there's probably a lot more going on below the surface. It's like an iceberg out there.
It's an iceberg?
Yeah. It's 90% part that you can't see.
Well, that's one Titanic question I'm not going to get into.
Yeah.
you talk about information. You know, one of the things that is happening is that in the UN, they have a proposal that's being sponsored by Russia, China, and India to regulate the Internet in terms of content and traffic. And I'm saying...
To move control from ICANN, which is ours, to ITC, which is run by the UN.
Right.
And what they want to do is to control content and traffic. I mean, like, wait a minute. I thought it was supposed to be, the Internet is supposed to be free speech, free access.
They can do it in their own country. It's not going to go in the United States of America.
You want a hint? I don't think
ever.
It's going to go in their country either.
No, it's not.
No, yeah. Now, wait a minute. That's not true. Is Google in China?
What power does the UN have now?
Wait a minute. Is Google in China?
There's a lot of people circumventing the Great Cyber Wall of China. A lot of them.
Well, you know how they're doing it. They're going through Hong Kong and then coming back out again.
Yeah.
Because Hong Kong has Google.
Yeah.
If China doesn't want it, the UN is not going to be able to push it on them.
No, well, the thing is, by the way, we do have a bipartisan bill pending in Congress. And at least this is where both sides agree is that, hey, the United States do not want to be under any control of UN
control of both content and traffic.
For anything.
Right.
Well, I just hope that the thing is, we know...
You've been to the UN. What do they get done now?
Free parking?
For the diplomats.
No, not what do they get away with. What do they get done?
No. Stevie's right. Free parking for the diplomats.
Yeah,
right. Okay.
You got a good deal.
Hey, listen, let me just get into something technical before we go back into the news, okay? You know, it's been brought up by a number of people, and more recently by Michael, our webmaster. He says, you know, if I want to have custom length cables for Ethernet, you know, wiring up my machine, how do I go about putting connectors on and what, you know, what is available? And I said, you know, in response to him, well, there's two ways of doing it. One is with a crimp tool, which I'm going to ask Stevie, what is a crimp tool? And the other is a punch-down impact tool. Stevie, can you explain what it is?
Yeah, crimp tool I do not recommend at all.
What? But can you explain what it is, though?
Well, you get the wire and you get the little 45 RJ45, and then you put that wire in there and then you crimp it. You squeeze it really tight. It's made just for that.
Wait. So what's wrong with using that?
It's not as reliable as a punch-down tool, and there's no way to really test it if things go wrong all of a sudden a year later, where the punch-on tool, you put that on the block. If you don't have a connection,
okay,
you
can
unscrew.
Now, explain to our listeners what a punch-down tool is.
Oh, a punch-down tool. It sort of has a spring-loaded, and you have receptacles. Just hold your finger out and imagine that you make the peace sign with your finger, and the wire would go in between, and the punch-down tool, spring-loaded, would push the wire down in between
your fingers. And it cuts the wire perfectly.
It cuts the wire perfectly.
Right.
And if there's any trouble, you can take the cover off the jack and pull those wires out and put them right back in again, even though that can be a problem sometimes.
I did some pricing on a quality a crimp tool and a quality punch down tool. They're not all that different in price. A good one is somewhere between $70 to $100, okay?
You know what? It's like buying Macintosh to run Pro Tools and buying a Windows machine to run Pro Tools. They will sell it to you.
Okay, well, because I know that some people, they use a toy hammer to nail, you know, to drive nails in.
If all you're going to do with your crimp tool is make phone cables, you can use a cheaper crimp tool.
Because phones are not as important as data.
Well, first of all, with phones, you're only talking about four wires at most.
Two.
Only two is important.
One pair. Phone is only two wires.
Actually, minimum is one
tip
pair.
And ring.
Yeah, but mostly the RJ14s, the RJ11s.
RJ14 is four wires.
Wait a minute.
It's four wires.
But that's two different phone lines. It's the same as a RJ11. They just call it RJ14 because it's two different phone lines.
But when you're making a phone cable, you pretty much always make it with four wires. But we're way off topic.
Yeah, nobody makes a phone. It's much cheaper to buy one for $1. 50 cents, 10 cents.
Wait a minute. If you want a custom length wire.
How long is this wire that you want a custom length?
All right.
Wire
I'm going to give you a length.
Go ahead. Do it.
How about 300 feet?
Then you get Cat 5 cable.
Six.
Cat 6.
Okay. You're using Cat 6. Okay. You get Cat 6 cable. You run that for the 300 feet. And then you put blocks on each side, and then you put the connector on the block, and then punch that into your
patch
panel.
How long a cable do you get?
You said 300 feet.
You can't buy 300 feet.
Yeah, you buy 1,000 feet.
You buy 1,000 feet, so you got to put
in
a cut
box
somewhere.
Yeah, well, you cut it, you measure it to length.
You guys are stringing a lot of cable. Do you ever put zip ties to bundle a bunch of cables together?
Yeah.
Because you're not supposed to.
No. Right.
You know, because the zip ties can actually mess with the cables.
They're that's if you make it too tight.
What do you mean?
I mean you can, like, mess with the cable by putting your zip tie too tight because it's rigid. There's actually a better connector called a millipede tie that is not only reusable, you can remove it.
Okay.
You can actually cut it off and use one tie to make five or six connections.
But I've never seen a problem with that.
You know
never.
What's going to happen? We're going to get a listener calling in and say, when it comes to cabling, Stevie does not know what he's talking about.
No.
Stevie, I bet, knows what he's talking about. I started on synthesizers. I know a whole lot about cabling.
Hey, listen. Wow.
I was going to write a book about
there it. There was an item that...
I installed cabling in the Pentagon.
You did?
No way.
Yes, I did.
You know, I was...
I worked in the war room.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. You know, I was in the EOB, the Executive Office Building,
yeah,
and it's historical, so there's no place to put the cabling, so the cabling's clearly visible. It's just a big
yeah,
thigh-sized bundle of cables running around
in the air.
In the air.
That is supposed to go through conduit, right?
Depends on what you're running.
Yeah.
No, not depends on what cable
you're talking. At the NOC in Australia, in Canberra, Australia, the cable's all in a glass channel in the wall that a sailor goes around and checks to make sure nobody's messing with it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it for
listen,
cable stories from around the world.
A news item that came out, and it kind of struck me, and I had to ask David this, wonder why, is the U.S. Navy just awarded a contract to Raytheon for about $28 million to install Linux ground control software for their drones.
Great idea.
Now, you know what drones are, right?
Sure.
Oh, the one that just crashed for $176 million in Maryland the other day?
I didn't know.
The Navy drone crashed?
Wow.
$176 million.
Yeah, somebody was saying, oh, they're going to steal our secrets, our drone secrets. I said, geez, it's nothing but an overgrown hobby airplane, you know?
Well, let me ask you this. Why are they using Linux rather than some other operating system?